Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 10. Maps and Legends, or Romulans and Robots.
Beautiful. No one's ever said that before about a Borg cube.
This isn't a Borg cube, Narek. It's the artifact. The Borg cube is mighty and omnipotent. The artifact is lost, severed from the collective, broken, vulnerable.
You find vulnerability and brokenness beautiful.
Is that strange? To find beauty in imperfection?
Certainly not very Romulan. But there's nothing very Romulan about this place at all.
Apart from the current owners. And the profits you extract from the exploitation of Borg technology.
Are you a subversive, Dr. Escher?
Sent by our enemies to foment revolution among the researchers.
Yes, I am. But it's too late now. You already slept with me. That makes you an accessory to my plot.
Clearly, I'll have to silence you.
Time for work.
All right, that was very charming. Now, how about
redirecting some of that energy?
How about you give the listeners, which, by the way, last episode I think I mentioned that we
last
had
week.
Last week we had like 3 million listeners, which was pretty good, but it turns out I misread it. We have like 300 million listeners.
Oh, that makes more sense.
I was off by two orders of magnitude. Weirdly, still mostly from Canada, which is puzzling because I think Canada has a population of, you know,
they don't even have that many people.
20 million people.
Well,
so that leads me to believe, on the one hand, I could be reading these stats incorrectly. On the other hand, I think there's a huge secret Canadian invasion force that is out there and happens to be fans of quality science fiction.
Well, if the numbers don't add up, you have to look for the implied reasoning for that. Hence the planet Vulcan.
Yeah, wait, what?
The planet Vulcan?
Wait, no, it's possible that worked. It's possible that worked. I admit I wasn't paying full attention, but I would like you to kind of walk us through the connection you were making.
This is from Wikipedia. I knew that. I knew it already. I did, but I just went to Wikipedia on the fly right here because we can do that now. Quote from Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
That's what they do in Germany.
I'm Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. Vulcan is a small hypothetical planet that was proposed to exist in an orbit between Mercury and the Sun. The 19th century French mathematician Urbain Le Verrier, I'm going to assume Verrier means Verrier, hypothesized that it's like the Fourier transfer, or whatever you do signals.
That's close enough.
Yeah. Hypothesized that the peculiarities in Mercury's orbit were the result of another planet, which he named Vulcan. Just like you were saying that the math didn't add up, so you led you to believe that the only way to account for those missing values is a secret force of Canadians.
Yeah, which is much more threatening to me than a planet.
Planet, yeah, understandably. They couldn't account for
Mercury.
They couldn't account for the orbit of Mercury. Yes, they couldn't account for the orbit of
it's
Mercury.
It's because of special relativity, my friends.
So the only way
and general relativity.
The only way the numbers added up was to create this planet Vulcan that they couldn't see, but they were like, the math makes it work.
What was the time period again for this guy?
19th century French mathematician. So
that's the 1800s, folks. Well, that's you know, that's science for you.
That's science.
Science had a problem. They feel so it's possible that in order to explain the level of listeners that we're achieving so far, that is sort of incongruous with the expectations, we might need a whole new field of physics.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds about right. But I mean, 300 million, the numbers are closer than they are in 3 million. I mean, that just wasn't adding up at all.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that.
And we all know that if the math almost adds up, it must be like more right. 2 plus 2 equaling 5 is more right than 2 plus 2 equaling 9, for example.
Yeah.
Wait. Is it closer? Though?
I don't know. We can decide it.
I mean,
is.
You they're both wrong. So.
I mean, I'm all about the subjective
but
and the objective.
5 is right. 5 is closer to
it's
4.
It's closer.
And what was it? You know, 5 is better than 3.
5 is, whoa, shit. No, but
it depends, unless it's like 5 slashes to your body. Five fingers removed would.
But if we go
five fingers in your nose.
If we go by Price is Right logic, then 5 is better than 3 because, 4 is too much. No, 5 is no. Price is Right logic would say 3 is better than 5 because you're trying to get at the 4, and if you overbid it at 5, then that's wrong. So yeah, 3 is actually better than 5.
That's excellent. All right, okay. Now. Star Trek.
Okay, I had to get that out of the way.
Star Trek. Star Trek Picard,
Episode 2,
Maps and Legends. First of all, everyone out there who needs to get in contact with us, you just do at It's Got Star Trek, you know, wherever, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever suits your fancy, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. This is all very easy. Mm-hmm. The website is itsgotstartrek.com, which is implied by the email, so don't worry about it. But
don't worry about it.
If you need to get in contact with us, do so. We are also planning to have, we want to encourage like reviews because that's like, they're always saying you got to get reviews. Otherwise people don't pay attention to your podcast. I don't even know where we're doing it. We've got so many listeners that we got too many listeners, frankly.
Yeah.
It's costing us a fuckload of in download, whatever, you know, because 300 million people downloading something, that's like a lot of bandwidth. But if you do leave a review,
that's
we're going to, Dan is going to tell a joke. For every review we get, mm-hmm. he will tell a joke on the next episode. Not, and if we get enough reviews, we'll do like a whole bonus episode.
It might be the yeah. same There's joke every time.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it might be variations.
But
it
still will be, yeah. It'll still be funny.
Yeah. Because he's got like a whole bookload of them, and they're not from a book, according to him.
No.
Like he made them up by himself.
Yeah. It's his own book.
But
he wrote that book.
I mean, I can
he's
give
so
you...
good at making jokes that they are similar to what you might find in a book, but they are not.
I was questioning where you were going with that, but I think that's proper. That's accurate what you said. I can give a teaser.
Finely cut gems of humor.
Yes, finely cut gems, crafted over billions of years, or how long does it take to make a diamond? 10,000?
That's to make the lumpy part.
The lumpy.
It doesn't take quite as long to make the cut.
You just got to cut it.
So Jesse, what do you call a waffle that burps too much?
Ooh. Is it a belching waffle?
It is. It is, Jesse.
There you go. So please rate and review on iTunes and Google Play and all the other
get more of that
nonsense that's out there. And then we will have fulfilled our legal obligations as professional podcasters. So yeah. Anyway, Maps and Legends, getting right into it. Dan and Jesse, what did you think?
I like it. The plot thickens, as they say,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so what did you think of like the beginning where they show the stuff going down on Mars? That was pretty cool.
It was First Contact Day.
Yeah, right. I didn't even know that was a holiday, but apparently it was.
Yeah, apparently it became one. I guess, and that's the day from the Star Trek movie of the same name, mm-hmm. right?
Voice Contact.
With Babe Guy.
I like how, so like that's like some kind of, it's like the shipyard and everybody's wearing like these goofy jumpsuits and like hard hats and stuff.
Yeah.
And that dude is all like, good morning, plastic people.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. I really liked it.
Because he was all cheery, like he already had his like hollow coffee in the morning.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he
hollow
was
hollow cocaine.
And then usually like when they talk about, you know, people or robots being oppressed or whoever being whatever, it's like talking down to him. Now, of course, calling them plastic people is talking down to them, right? But at the same time, he didn't sound like he was being a total dick about it. He was like,
no.
He seemed legitimately like, hey, guys.
He's like, hey, welcome to work.
But it was still kind of a dick thing to say. Right?
I think, I don't know if this was on purpose, if this was directed or not, or a choice of the actor, but it reminded me of how I talk to the Google Home or how people talk to Alexa,
yeah.
Where there's like a weird kind of politeness because you kind of feel like you're talking to something, but there's like a sarcastic edge to the politeness.
Right. That's
and Google's like, what did I do now?
Oh yeah, when you get mad at Google, Google gets
it's like, Google,
sad.
No, it's all right.
Does Google get like
you're doing
like,
a good job?
Does Google get like Google gets self conscious now and stuff?
Yeah, if you get upset or curse, Google will, and because it didn't work, Google will say, "I'm sorry, I'm doing the best I can do," or some variation. Oh, yeah, and what's creepier is it does a variation on that, and that's apt to this conversation, considering the plot of this episode and the plot that seems to be developing on the show of this. Sort of that pro AI versus anti AI as conceptualized by the synths. The synths. And I will say this first scene to me was something straight out of The Expanse. Like you can see the influence of The Expanse.
Yeah.
Blue collar characters we don't know. Something terrible's about to happen. Yeah. That's a constant thing, theme on The Expanse.
Yeah, Star Trek doesn't really talk too much about sort of the working class, I guess you'd call it. And they're, you know, there opens up with them being...
It's all officers, except for O'Brien.
Yeah, and this opens up with them talking about how, oh, everyone else gets, you know, first contact day off, but we don't. And that's, you know, some kind of stuff that Jean-Luc Picard and Riker
and they've
and all
got
them
like they've got a
about.
Shitty replicator and it just gives you like a horrible tray of food.
Oh yeah, that brown like, sticky
makes the microwave.
And it's like, why didn't they give the, okay, this is where they're building, this is where they built the fucking Enterprise. Why don't they give these people some food?
Yeah, I thought there was no scarcity or whatever in the future.
Well, they talk about, there's a little Easter egg from one of the Discovery shorts. They talk about the Una, you know, number one. She's the one who in the short Trek Q&A, she's talking about how she created a new matrix for the food replicators because she didn't like how the sugars or the starches or something came out. I think it's the Una Omino matrix. And
oh,
she,
that's what she was talking
she
about.
Comments, she's like, I wish they'd go back to that. So she's sort of lamenting. Clearly, there's like a new replicator matrix.
I thought it was called like Uno Momento or something.
Hey, Uno Momento.
Like, oh, that sounds better.
They were calling it some brown sticky shit.
Yeah, now this is some brown sticky
shit. They made that joke twice. They said like, yeah. I know what's, because he was told that joke. Speaking of jokes,
yeah.
What's brown and sticky? And like the synthetic is just like, I don't get it, ha ha ha.
They really wanted you to think
he just kind of was like, eh.
And this opening, he was all saying like, hell yeah,
yeah, hell yeah,
hell yeah.
Well, what'd you think of the android? I mean, I thought it was pretty good. Clearly,
I've seen that guy before. Who is that?
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
I didn't look it up either because there's not a lot of stuff available.
But yeah, they really drove home the point that. Yeah, like you just said, it's not Data. It's some kind of poor weirdo.
But it has Data eyes, Data shaped head and face. Yeah. Some movements are very clearly modeled off of early Data, mixed with sort of more sort of generic, you know, this is how a robot would walk. You know,
but how, they still haven't figured out yet that robots don't get jokes. So what are they fucking, they must be fucking with
them.
No,
they're fucking with them. Clearly, because the whole, like, not getting jokes thing is in Android.
There was that whole episode with Joe Piscopo, and he was trying
to teach. Oh, man. So weird. Cocaine-fueled 80s.
Data
even
was walking
Trek,
around with, like, a cigar. And
Star Trek did not escape the cocaine of the 80s, for sure.
But, Jesse, you were saying, yeah, the part where they were, where it's all like, hell yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Was she fucking with him there, too? It's because it almost seemed like she wasn't in that part.
She wasn't, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's like he was just trying to say stuff that they were saying.
Yeah, and then she, what did she said something like, you know, well, what were you doing or something.
He's
like
nothing.
If we break it down,
and then
from
she
a,
was like, hell yeah, yeah, you know.
If we break it down from sort of
it's like, did she think he was being coy? Like, I don't, like, is that why she said it? I don't know.
I think this is good writing. It's good characterization, because what they've done is they have this room full of people, and the majority of the people in the room get very cleanly defined by very simple and brief lines. The woman who says, you know, did you have any fun last night? Hell yeah, etc. She seems to want to have some actual interaction with the guy,
yeah.
and see where, you know, kind of play around with, like,
is he trying to be nice?
Is he learning? The guy with the stick joke,
the feces joke.
More like, this is a toy. This is hilarious. Yeah. I can talk to, you know, like somebody goofing around having Google Home tell jokes or something like
Google,
that.
Say balls.
And then you have the woman who is just sort of like kind of mean and offensive and like, I don't care. This is an Android. It doesn't mean anything.
That was the lady that was like, this is some sticky shit.
I thought they were making the second time, because they used that joke twice. I thought the second time they're at first, I was like, are they making some kind of drug reference? You know,
right.
It's like, I'll here's some brown and sticky
the
shit,
old
you know?
Sticky icky.
And yeah. It was like, right. Something about space pineapple, space Heyron. Pineapple again.
Heyron.
I mean, if kids these days are doing the you know resin and stuff, mm-hmm. We're fine. More power to you. Well, what are they going to be doing in the future?
I don't know. Brown, sticky, replicated
sticky,
shit.
Sticky, sticky, replicated.
Oh, space pineapple.
Space cannabis.
Space abyss.
All right.
But yeah, then he fucks them all up, right?
Yeah.
And then he just fucking lays them out.
Some kind of tool. Pretty brutal. Welding tool or something.
That was an awesome way to kill someone, because that laser just went through those motherfuckers.
It was fucked up.
At first, it was like nothing. Yeah. I was like, okay, they're dead. Okay, and then it shows
and
like, whoa!
The security guys come in and they're like, stop it. They just it's like, what? He's not going to listen to you. Like, why are you saying stop
right?
it? Like,
yeah. So why did Why did he shoot himself? So he wouldn't
presumably
give up
to avoid the evidence.
Yeah, he's probably got some stuff in his brain.
He better have hit just the right spot. I mean, he's a synth. He can presumably do that. But if they can replicate a data,
well, they didn't know that. This is 14 years ago.
Oh, that's right.
And all that other
which
stuff.
Which means present, quote unquote, present day is 2399.
Yeah.
Because that was 2385.
And these guys seem to have been in service for
Utopia
a while.
Planitia Shipyards.
So, all right. So we move along. Opening theme again, which I got to say, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, one last thing is that the zoom in, they did another zoom in shot. A Discovery kind of style zoom in shot.
But I thought it was more a little bit more elegant. Now, granted, to be fair to Discovery, they have been getting a lot better. I think they've been toning things down on Discovery. So this is extension of that, where it is that kind of cool zoomy boomy thing, but it's not
zoom boom,
it's not totally crazy. But yeah, so you get to the opening theme, which is I wasn't super excited about it last week. It's starting to grow on me somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think partly that's some of the story elements.
It sounds very very much like a movie music as opposed to television music. And well, I mean, it's all very subjective, but that's what I hear out of it. Like,
and that's like at the end of last episode when they were in the reclamation, Romulan Reclamation Center, they were doing some like with the violins and cellos and things. It sounded like Dark Knight,
which is kind of like if the original series. That's very much like we think of as movie music, you know.
So then another, you know, I think we again open up on the once after coming out of the opening theme, we again see the Chateau Picard, the vineyard, and I thought they did a better job than last week in terms of the editing of going in, but it was they didn't have the crazy fades, you know, it just showed, you know, vineyard and grass building. I just wish each of those shots was 2 seconds longer. I mean, 2 seconds longer, and it would be more like, you know, ease you into it, this calm atmosphere, whatever. Anyway, minor nitpick, it's silly.
Well, you gotta wonder how editing works now with, you know, all access, you know, on
they seem to be keeping the episodes pretty tight, and I wonder if they just think that they're eager to, I don't know if syndication is even still a thing.
Yeah, right.
Because it's CBS All Access in the US, it's Amazon Prime pretty much everywhere else, is my understanding. Might be in Netflix on some places, but I think it's mostly Amazon Prime. So they theoretically don't have to have limits. I have been hearing some people argue that there's an effort to go back a little bit to even with straining, because that while the time limits from TV could cause problems, because, you know, you want to get a little bit of information here or there, that it also can, the unlimited options can cause problems too, because it can create unbalanced stories if you just keep adding stuff and you don't have some constraint on you,
right?
Other than the filming, like literally the budget of having the actors there and stuff is the only constraint.
Going,
but I don't know.
Back to the vineyard, if the vineyard is supposed to represent like sort of a calm and peaceful part of Picard's life, whether that's good or bad,
calm and peaceful,
then they should spend a little bit more time on the shots to give you more of a sort of calming, peaceful sort of, you can,
yeah,
and you feel the atmosphere of the vineyard, and you get into it a little bit more than.
I agree. That's what I'm missing out. I'm missing out on that, like, easing into it. And it's partly, obviously, Picard wants to kind of get away. And
he definitely wants to get away.
But you're supposed to, it would accentuate the fact that him wanting to get away is a serious thing, considering how idyllic you know, this spot is.
Right, exactly.
And you know, they talk about it, like Commodore O, who comes up in a little bit, she clearly, they thought...
Commodore 60
she, she calls him the Hermit of something?
The Hermit of Labar.
Labar,
that
okay.
That part of France, where, yeah. And they just thought, well, he's off to the side, and we don't have to worry about him, yeah. Right? So the next thing I noticed, and again, minor nitpick, and it's not even a nitpick, actually, because I think it worked out okay, but... When we see Picard speaking with the Romulans in his study, and then it starts intercutting with the investigation of her apartment.
Oh, that was a really interesting sort of thing going on there.
I highly suspect that that was not a directorial choice. I think those were intended to be two separate scenes, and something about it, like, didn't, when they got to the final edit, just wasn't making sense to have those scenes placed that way. So... they kind of decided, let's just intercut it in this kind of slightly bizarre way.
I was wondering if there's a name for all sorts of things. For example, there's a name when it shows, right, two simultaneous things happening, except they show one shot of one person, like you get two people running towards each other from far away or something, and you see one shot of one person running, and then it switches, it cuts to the other person running, and it cuts back. You know, you have two scenes that are, and it doesn't show them side by side. It just cuts between the two. There's like a name for that. But anyways, I was wondering if there's some kind of name for that technique where they just did that, because it was really bizarre. And that's interesting. Yeah, you say that you don't know if they, you don't think that was intended, because that also jumped out. That's got to be, if you're blind, first of all, that's got to be really difficult to parse. If you were deaf and going by captions, it's got to be difficult.
Oh, man. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. And because it was difficult, it took me a minute at first. I was like, wait, oh, okay. Something, what's going, this is weird. It took me a second.
Because it's the same two people talking.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's the same two people talking.
Pretty much. I mean, Jaban is obvious. He's not in the apartment, but... And, but other than that, it was a little disconcerting. My guess is that was sort of a late editing thing. Is probably, but otherwise, I thought the information, I thought the acting was great. The information in the scene was really interesting.
Because that was pretty cool in the apartment, and she had that crazy gadget, and she was like scanning around. He's like, that kind of stuff's illegal.
Oh yeah, yeah. I like how Picard is like explaining to the Romulan how their forensic molecular reconstruction, like, how effective it is. He's like, you know, that stuff you're using,
and it's not that reliable.
Yeah, it's like, oh really?
Totally like scans, and it's like, yeah, there they are, over there in the corner.
what popped up in my mind was, this reminded me in a weird way of Rising Sun, both the book and the movie.
Where
the girl is murdered and they go to investigate her apartment, and the Japanese corporation has already been in there, you know, to clean up, and they make it look like somebody's been in there, but the Sean Connery character is all making the point, you know, that this looks like somebody made it look like a certain thing, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it was like, these guys are so good, but like their mistake isn't being too good, kind of vibe.
Yeah. So, right. So they had to overwrite the particle residuum. Right. And so, but they didn't,
leptons.
They could have gone in and wiped the phone records and stuff, but right. That would have looked too shady. So they just made them hard. They scrambled them. And so that was kind of, at first when I saw that, I thought it was going to be like a weird sort of plot device thing or something, but it wasn't actually. I thought that was pretty good.
And this is shaping up, and this is not my own thought. A lot of people have been noting this, is this is shaping up to be almost a, not quite a film noir, but a little bit Dixon Hill, you know, mystery. Yeah. And there are film noirs that start with like the murder, and then the detective decides
was,
to go.
It was like, definitely more like, sort of a crime show, that these particular scenes were like,
what's her name?
Very crime show esque.
What's her name? Who's the synthetic synthetic professor from
Soji?
Or
Dodge?
No, not Dodge.
Or Allison Pill. She plays
Allison Pill. Yeah,
I'm forgetting her character name.
Yeah. Anyways, there's that scene that cuts in, and she's all reading Isaac Asimov's robot books or whatever, and those are basically mystery crime novels.
That's a good point.
Under a science fiction backdrop. Interestingly,
Agnes Jurati.
That's her character. Interestingly, it's kind of
Okinawa.
Picard gave that someone's got to have commented on that, right? The dig he gives about sci-fi. It's not really a dig so much as he's commenting on.
Yeah,
it's like
just being funny.
It was just a sly reference to conventions or something.
I don't even think that. I think it's a deep. I think it's a deep cut Easter egg. I think it says it's two things. It's a deep cut Easter egg, but
I just
also,
read James Joyce.
It's also making the point. I mean, he's living sci-fi, right? Yeah. So that's sort of like, why would he be into that?
Yeah.
But I think it's a deep cut Easter egg is because there's an old episode, you know, when remember when, you know, Picard is like, he says he's not much of an actor. Mm. And it's kind of like, it's an in-joke because Patrick Stewart was already a famous Shakespearean actor, and he's trying to do something. He's like, I'm not much of an actor.
Dear old Patty Stewart.
I think it's kind of like that. I'm not much into sci-fi, but it's kind of meant as an ironic.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
And the Asimov stuff is all about robots, and that, right. At least that particular thing.
Right. Going back to the... around that scene, there was the Romulan secret police thing, the Tal Shiar. Mm. And then they were talking.
And the other one.
Then there's Jat Vash. What I didn't. Okay, so the Tal Shiar is the Romulan secret police. Yeah. But then Laris was saying that the Tal Shiar.
Her accent is so amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
She's really Irish.
When she got pissed off at the both of them near the end, yeah. That was awesome.
She like drops the tea set.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not like she drops it out of shock. She throws that.
She throws it down and she's like, fuck you, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to go drink a potato.
Yeah. So... Did you say drink a potato?
Yeah, it's like what Irish people do.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
She is Romulan ale. It's made out of Romulan potatoes. It is completely racist, by the way.
So the Jat Vash, she's saying that the Tal Shiar is what she said is a mask for the Jat Vash. Now that's sort of misleading because that implies they're just the same thing.
It's like an organization within an organization.
Yeah, I think the implication
like a deep order.
It may be that it wasn't very eloquently conveyed, but my understanding was it was sort of saying, look, you guys have been worrying about the Tal Shiar, you should be because they are quote unquote the secret police. But what you don't know is that in addition to them, what's working behind the scenes of them that even the Tal Shiar doesn't fully know about, the Tal Shiar doesn't realize they're being controlled by these people. They think they're doing their own thing. They, you know, it's kind of like with Section 31. And I think ultimately this Jat Vash thing is the big question here,
yeah.
Right? Of this episode and presumably of this season to a certain degree, because I immediately started thinking, what about Section 31, right? Mm-hmm. Because Commodore O... They didn't state explicitly, but she seems Section 31-y, right?
Yeah, she seems shady.
Right? I mean, even beyond being shady because of the whatever thing she's doing with the Romulan thing, you got to think, what are her motivations?
Is she actually a Vulcan, or is she just pretending to be a Vulcan?
Well, that's another question.
Because who knows the difference is between a Vulcan
and when did the split happen?
She was doing an inverse Vulcan salute with her hands when she was sitting there. Have you ever do that thing where you do the Vulcan salute?
Was she?
And then you take the two fingers, but then you put the middle and ring finger together, and you spread the index and pinky.
I didn't notice that. Oh my God, that's symbolic.
That's easy. That's not. That's cut. It's tricky to do, right? But anyone can basically learn to do it quickly, pretty quickly, I guess. But I found it difficult to do both hands put together like that. It was like, but one at a time,
right.
I'm trying
to do it right now.
Yeah, it's difficult.
My hands are literally shaking.
But yeah, so that was like an inverse Vulcan salute.
That's brilliant. I did not see that. And
yeah.
I think that had to have been on purpose.
Yeah. Dude, it's like an upside down flag or something. She's like,
this guy's got game.
This guy's got game.
This guy brings his game to
you
the guy, party.
You all better read some reviews write some reviews so we can hear some more jokes from Dan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jokes and insight. In fact,
we
maybe
gotta hear
that
Belgian waffle joke. We're going to hear that one 10 times.
It could be we might have to do the reverse and be like, if you don't start leaving reviews,
yeah. We'll stop.
Dan's going to stop all this fucking insight and switch purely to jokes.
Hey, man, I have no shame. I'll do whatever. It takes. I won't be insulted.
Hey, did you hear about that one about the Romulan and the Vulcan and the
okay.
Gorn? And
so just I want your guys.
She does talk about the Gorn hegemony at one
point.
Yeah,
I love the Gorn hegemony.
Okay. Anyway, so basically, what you're saying about the mask thing, we would have been more accurate to say it was a front, because a front would be like a small business, and that business still operates as a business and it does its thing. But then underground, there's a giant facility that's hidden by like a tiny building on the surface.
Yes. At the high level, I still think at the nuance level it's not good enough, because it's more like you have the CIA, right? And the CIA is doing their thing, and they think they're all doing their thing, but then like one day you find out actually it's like some aliens or something.
It's like the Masons.
Who have people embedded in the CIA and are thus influencing how the CIA,
the
like,
lizard
what the CIA
people.
Is actually Boy. Doing. I think that's kind of thing. It yeah, front totally works.
Okay.
But I want to get you guys' reaction to some of these theories that have been floating around online since this episode came out, because I don't know. I think they're pretty fucking fascinating. And some of this, so, okay. One idea is, the question is, what is the Zatvash, what's their secret? Right? That's the main.
Right. Well, apparently, it's an unnameable dark secret.
Well, apparently right? The secret's so crucial that it'll break your face if you know
right.
it. Which they're really hype. They're going to kind of paint
only
themselves.
Only if you're a Romulan, probably.
The story writers are really hyping themselves up with that point. Because, you know, how can that really ever live up to anything
but,
that serious?
But when you hear some of the theories that people came up with, and who knows what direction they're going to go into, but I find some of this stuff pretty convincing. And the cool part is, I think there's a few things that maybe won't break my mind, but I could see it breaking the minds of some people in the Star Trek universe. One theory is that Romulans are actually synths that were produced by the Vulcans, and that's why they had to leave.
Right.
That they were shoved off world by the Vulcans, right?
All Romulans are
all synths? Romulans. That's one thought. Because this is all about, remember, this whole plot so far is about biological.
There's
got to
be some sort
synth.
Of that ancient thing that happened with synths.
That would fuck everything
like.
Up.
Because all we know, the main details we have about the schism between the Vulcans and the Romulans is there was a conflict thousands of years ago, and we've mainly heard the Vulcan side of this story, and the Vulcans say that they let their emotions get too crazy. Then Surak came around and said, yo, 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 logic, am I right? And a significant portion of them were like yeah. And then the Romulans were like, fuck logic, yo. And then there was a scuffle, and the Romulans left the fucking planet.
They tried
and then
to
the
make,
Vulcans took 1,500 or 1,200 years to like rebuild their fucking world.
They tried to make a bunch of Datas, and they made a bunch of Lores.
That's one theory. Here's another theory that may even be better. The Romulans are the original race, and the Vulcans are the synths, and they got kicked off the planet because the AI, the Vulcans, started taking over with their logic and stuff. And think about this one piece of evidence: they can do like Katra shit and stuff. That's basically like downloading your brain. Now, granted, they've done it to like between humans and stuff too, so there's maybe that doesn't work.
So,
but that would be also somewhat mind-breaking. Mm-hmm.
So, that would make more sense because. In terms of, so the Romulans hate synths.
Because they got kicked off their planet.
Right, so that would make more sense for that one. I have a hard time believing that they would say Vulcans are all synths. I mean.
And so maybe like Sarek was the original.
It's got to break your mind though.
It's got to break my mind.
Whatever this fucking secret is, it's got to break your fucking mind.
It's got to break my fucking mind, it's true. Because like why would Romulans, in the first one though, why would Romulans hate synths if they were Romulans? Or is it just a secret they're trying to keep from themselves? Or
yeah,
something?
Well, that could be. Yeah.
One suggestion was that
the darkest secrets are the secrets you keep from yourself.
Oh, snap.
For real.
it's true.
It's classic.
On the Romulan side, the idea is that the reason the Taj Vash are keeping the secret is basically to protect the Romulans because they, the first few generations knew that they were synths, but then they started not telling their kids because it was causing mental breakdowns or something. I mean, think about it. You might ruin your fucking life.
It's an existential quandary.
Yeah. So if you raise a whole culture of people not knowing that and not having it easy, and you instill in them a secretive society, and that's the Romulans has a tradition of everyone tattletaling on each other and secrets and this, compartmentalization, that's going to make it harder to accidentally discover this. And if you discourage the scientific study of AI and stuff like that, you will discourage yourselves or others finding out what you are.
Yeah, word.
But on the other hand, I do agree. I think that in a lot of ways, the Vulcans being the created synths that then expelled their people.
Because the humans are about to figure it out, and that's why the Romulans are like killing
and,
some
and you'll
stuff.
Recall on Enterprise, like one of the beefs that the Vulcans had, like one of those weird beefs that they had, was that it took them like over 1,000 years to after the schism to get their shit back together so they could become a spacefaring
species. That's a long
species.
Time.
Yeah, it's a long time. And they said, they said, we discovered space flight and then it took like, 1,000 years or 1,200 years or something for us to like get our shit together where we weren't assholes anymore. Mm-hmm. You guys discovered space flight and like fixed all your problems in like a century. And there was almost like a bitterness that the humans were all like able to do it quickly.
Well, humans are better. Yeah. So was it the did the Klingons come up with the warp drive before the Romulans, and the Romulans stole the technology?
I think in the old school, like, yeah. The idea, because, you know, Star Trek, of course.
There's, like, the ancient feud between the Romulans and the Klingons, and it has to do with, like, one of them had cloaking technology, and one of them had the warp drive, and they... Somehow they got pissed off and they stole the shit from each other and now they hate each other.
It gets confusing too because there are tales of like the original encounters between some of these races being without warp drive and a whole battle spot with like not, you know, and it sort of doesn't make any sense with what we understand later. But you know, that's just.
But it is. It's always cool when you to think about how like okay, humans just got into space. But, like, there's these other people that have just been out in space for just thousands of years. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
From our, like, perspective of, you know.
And an interesting thing that they did in Enterprise was...
More like Star Wars or something.
You'd wonder if the Vulcans have had warp-capable spaceflight for so long, why wouldn't they have, you know, explored more of the galaxy, taken over more of the galaxy? And then on Enterprise, you see that the Vulcans don't have much interest in exploration. Right. They sort of have an interest in strategic things for resources and things, but they have a curiosity, but it doesn't extend so far as to be like, let's all get on a ship and... just sort of cruise around for 20 years.
Wasn't that... Yeah, well, that was Enterprise, right? Where T'Pol was all like, why are you exploring that
yeah,
thing?
She was always dissuading them. They were always
humans
like,
are the ones that are always like, let's grow as a species.
Yeah, and Discovery...
let's take over people's planets and subjugate them.
Well,
and
that's one way of doing it.
Let's make
them
buy blue jeans
still growing
and watch our
changing,
TV shows.
Yeah.
And Discovery, what's his name? Fish guy. Fucked a fish. Fish. Woman fucked a fish.
You mean Saru? Because
Saru, yeah, okay.
Are you talking about the recent movie where a woman fucked?
Yeah,
a
yeah, same actor plays both characters.
But when
in which Star Trek?
I'm talking
in Discovery.
Oh, Discovery.
Yeah, when
oh right, okay.
Yeah, because she all wanted to explore that beacon or whatever, and he was all it's scary. We shouldn't do it. It's too scary. You know?
Not everybody wants to explore.
Well, he's a scared dude, man.
Yeah.
So the other vibe I was getting. Now this is not quite a vibe yet. Like we'll call it a pre-vibe. The pre-vibe is if there's some, you know, there's a little bit of the Section 31. Maybe there's something going on there. I fully expect them to be involved one way or the other. Possibly as the good guys. This might be how they ease us into the Section 31 show by showing they're not always complete shitheads, promoting genocide. Sometimes they do shady stuff that's useful. But the other pre-vibe I get is a bit of a Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country vibe, where you have agents from various antagonistic peoples teaming up together in order to maintain the status quo or to advance some particular agenda. In other words...
Because now the Romulans are in the state that the Klingons were in Star Trek VI.
It's similar, yeah. Yeah,
similar.
Or you're talking about some cross-culture Illuminati kind of situation?
So in Star Trek VI, the assassination of Chancellor Gorkon, it turned out in the end was because Klingons and humans from Starfleet and the
and
Klingon
Vulcans.
Empire, and they all teamed up together because they were like, we want to keep shit the same way. We all personally benefit
that Vulcan chick from Sex and
from the City. Current state of affairs. We don't need this dude, this Abraham Lincoln looking motherfucker, David Warner, causing peace because. Peace is great and all, but it's not going to be good for our like weapons factories and our war, whatever. Like they didn't go into detail about what their motivations were, but the implication.
He was a Cardassian, also, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, he played.
Our four lights.
They better have some sort of in joke Easter egg.
He's in
about
Time
that.
Bandits too.
He's in everything. He's in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles too. The Secret of the Ooze.
That's right.
Secret of the Ooze.
And he's in Star Trek V. He plays the Federation ambassador in Star Trek V. Anyway, we'll have to do a podcast on Star Trek V because that's an interesting, flawed, but interesting movie. So anyway, that's my pre-vibe is that there might be something going on there. Now, it's sort of implied already because there's the Starfleet person, Commodore O, is obviously somehow involved in all this. But I think even maybe beyond that, you know, we're going to find out there's...
She may just be a pawn of the Romulans, seemingly.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens.
There was some line where she knew that it was about
that Picard was talking about the Zhat Vash
or whatever. Right. And then Rizzo says, "How did you know that?" And she goes, "Don't insult me. It's not good for your career." I don't know if that was just being exposition-y or what, but that at least would imply that she's a powerful person.
I think it implies. So I saw some people say that it implied that she had
Starfleet.
Because she was acting kind of, you know, aggressive with who the person who's presumably her superior officer.
Right, the admiral.
Admiral who's the chief of staff.
Admiral that ranks the commodore.
Commander in chief of the entire Starfleet. The Commodore is taking orders from her, but she felt comfortable enough to be aggressive. So that characterization.
Wait, Commodore was taking orders from who?
From the Admiral Clancy. The Admiral who bitched out.
Commodore is the Commodore.
Or yelled at.
Commodore was taking. Clancy was asking about the secret.
Commodore is between captain and admiral, so an admiral ranks.
Yeah, and then the admiral is asking about the secret Romulan police, and then Commodore Oro was like, "I'll tell you if I know anything." So,
yeah. It's like if there was such a thing, then you would know because I would know.
Yeah,
and people seem to think that. They think that
Commodore was being aggressive about that.
Yeah, but they think that means that she had the admiral's communications line or office bugged. Possible, but you know, Picard,
yeah. But I mean,
didn't mention the Zatvash there. I think they were implying that she knows even more than the admiral.
Yeah.
What happened. The series of events, the way the scenes play out, is the admiral calls up Commodore O and is like, "Dude, Picard came in here acting like a lunatic, talking about Romulan assassins. What? Yeah, this is crazy." Commodore O knows exactly what she's talking about. And so then at that point says, "I'm going to go check my shit." And then she calls in her Romulan. Yeah, she looked in her shit and then she's like, "Oh, she probably pulled up some feeds or something. Like maybe when they were in the apartment where they assassinated the girl, maybe they bugged the apartment."
Mm-hmm. Them Romulans are sneaky.
They will get you.
They'll sneak on you.
They'll sneak on your face.
The other thing is that Star Trek has a weird long tradition of anti-AI, like anti-artificial intelligence, going all the way back to the TOS episode, The Ultimate Computer, which was all about, we're going to automate the whole thing. We won't even need captains or crews or anything, basically, is what they're saying. And in that, it turns out, the computer kind of goes crazy.
There's all that Dr. Pulaski stuff where she's
Dr. Pulaski's not into
shit to
it.
Data.
Yeah, but
Data's always treated like shit by, like, including Riker in an encounter at Farpoint. He's immediately like weirded out by him. In Discovery, they have the whole, like, I know you haven't seen it, Jesse, but the control subplot in Discovery season 2 is like a big thing.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, Data was shown to be awesome.
Reluctantly, in the legal perspective of Starfleet, and as we can see, they still ended up making the army of slaves that aren't quite sentient, to be fair.
Oh, you're saying Starfleet treats them like shit.
I'm saying, like, Star Trek in general. I'm not suggesting that Star Trek is anti-AI per se, but they've done a lot of stories around it, and they generally fall on the side of, like, give AI the freedom or whatever. But when you're thinking from the perspective of the quote-unquote Star Trek universe, if you're inhabiting that universe, there's a long history of, like, AI is causing troubles. So we got to be careful with that shit. Forget about the Romulans being worried about it. The Federation themselves, they don't have, like, their ship's computer can, like, make Moriarty, and that was an accident. You know, and then there was that episode where the ship kind of, like, became semi-sentient for a little bit itself and was acting weird. That was, like, a late TNG episode.
There's a bunch of holodeck incidents where the holodeck.
Yeah, but that was just a way to churn out stories.
But the EMA, become, you know, the Doctor on Voyager, he became sentient too. But again, there were in-universe, I'm talking about, not the morality of the show. I'm talking about in-universe, there were, again, with the EMH, stories about whether or not he deserves to be free and have rights, et cetera, et cetera. So that's clearly something that comes up a lot in the universe. So it's kind of interesting that this is sort of continuing and perhaps will conclude or be a major chapter in that long ongoing conversation that Star Trek has had about AI.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's based around Data, the story is based around the search for Data, or basically whatever. It's going to be a lot of sort of questions about synths and stuff like that. And the Borg, you know, Borgs are sort of being intertwined with this plot as well.
And if it turns out that one of these crazy theories is true, like that the Romulans or the Vulcans are all synths or something, it will be that the conversation will be kind of Battlestar Galactica-y in the sense of, like, what does it even fucking mean to be alive? Like, is there a distinction? Right? Because the conclusion of Battlestar Galactica is there is not.
Yeah.
Because, like, what was synth is now quote-unquote real. And then that creates their own version of synths. And it kind of cycles over and over again.
So what do the Rizzo and her brother. I was getting some weird, like,
yeah, the sex vibes.
Yeah, from like the Crow. Like, did you yeah. remember the Crow, the villains?
Billie Eilish and her brother.
Yeah,
both of whom I have nothing but the greatest respect for, yeah. and I love that they are in the world.
They can write some songs.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
So it was
everyone's had that.
Yeah, you know. Those vibes. So I thought that was. I don't know what they're going for. That is
those
it going to
full on vibes? It's not pre vibes.
Yes, full on vibes. The pre vibes though, that's the most densest, most potent kind of vibes I've heard.
But yeah, the those characters are interesting. I think it was like getting real
vibes.
It was getting pre-vibes. Like real Deep Space 90, like the whole thing with her brother and stuff, which was I was digging.
Well, that whole Borg cube has a DS9 feel to it. Sorry, it's not. What was that all about? So like, it's not a Borg. This was also confusing.
Did they just find it?
They said
it's
so.
A semantic argument.
Where did it come
so
from?
They said it's not. A Borg cube, it's the artifact. Like, was there significance to the fact that it's the artifact? Is it,
right,
is it
that's
supposed
what
to be?
I was wondering about.
So it's a Borg. So my understanding is it was a Borg cube.
Yes.
It just got cut off from the Borg collective.
I think it's a semantic argument that it is no longer belonging to the Borg.
Right.
It is now.
But is this
owned
a
by the
is this a famous Borg cube that was
right? It's yeah, because
that
it's,
was isolated. During some incident, or was it just sort of accidentally cut off?
Right, that's what I'm going
through. Something else entirely.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. Yeah, exactly. Like, because they say it's the artifact.
The artifact.
Is it the only known incidence of a cube that sort of got, like,
right.
based on some famous war or some shit
right.
like that? Exactly, right. So I don't know if and what the
Romulans. I was
wondering
that myself, and I was trying to look it up on the internet. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah. And the Romulans are just doing what? They're just pillaging it, basically, to get
well,
shit
it's,
for it.
That's what it seems
yeah.
like, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
It's like, what are they up to on that?
Well, there's something sneaky.
They're definitely
it.
Doing the whole, you know, unborging people,
unborging.
Which is interesting. Why are they doing that?
Yeah, and also that the. So Daj, it was a bit on the nose, right? And they even say it in the episode that she was studying robotics and stuff like that at the Daystrom Institute mm-hmm. or whatever. So. That's on the nose. And then what's her sister doing? Her
Dude.
Sister is a robot who's saving people's lives by destroying their robot parts. So that's kind of...
Yeah.
Is that the opposite? Is it the same? I don't know. But that's her role, is resurrecting people robots by getting rid of the robot. And she's a robot. So she must have some... She's going to have some self-hating shit coming up,
she
probably.
Doesn't know she's a robot.
And this
yeah, but she's going to find... But yeah,
she's
going to
find
out.
She's going
to find gonna
be.
She's going to learn.
And this
going to be
not
pissed.
Appear, this is clearly not a... It's not a secret. Because when I saw the previews, I thought the Romulans must have had this like secret Borg cube they stole and were doing some crazy stuff. But they have all these fellows from prominent institutes, the Trill Institute, you know.
Yeah, they had a Trill Institute.
Soji is clearly coming from Earth, presumably, or whatever, you know, the what was it, Rigel or something, whatever school she graduated from. But the point being that these are not, this is not some secret mission shit. This they appear
right.
to have tons of people. In fact, there seem to be way more like non-Romulans.
Like,
than
Romulans. Like the new person that comes on, and like she's some kind of doctor too.
Yeah, she's a Trill.
Oh, she's the
yeah.
Trill. Okay,
yeah, she's
word.
The Trill.
And Narek. Yeah, so we discovered that Narek is, well, maybe not necessarily, well, he's on the side of bad right now, but he also seems like he's getting kind of pushed around by his sister. So he just
yeah.
seemed like, he's like, so in the beginning when he introduced himself to Soji and said, you know, oh, you have a sister? I have a brother. My brother's dead. I'm really bummed out about it. And I cry sometimes and it sucks. And she's like, whoa, we just met, but I'm really turned on by that. And that's like how they met. So... So that was just on the when I first saw him, I was like, oh, that was a line. He was given a line. But near the end, I'm thinking, no, he's actually kind of a troubled guy. You know, he's got some conflicted, troubled shit going on. So who knows? So he's kind of
he is a Romulan.
Yeah, but he's a Romulan. But we don't know if he's gonna have some sort of. He's gonna do something. He's gonna do something really shitty at some point, right? So,
yeah.
But we're not entirely clear. What we do know, the information we got in
but
this
he
episode,
might get redeemed.
He might get. I agree. That's a possibility. The information we got in this episode was that, you know, what was she, a lieutenant commander, lieutenant Rizzo?
I think it was
just
lieutenant.
Just a plain lieutenant.
I saw
yeah.
two pips on her.
Yeah,
I think lieutenant.
She's just a full lieutenant.
I just heard lieutenant.
So Lieutenant Rizzo, her plan in the previous episode, she clearly ran that mission, and the goal was to retrieve Daj. Now, there's nothing particularly controversial about that, but we've confirmed that, and by confirming that they weren't trying to destroy her, they were trying to retrieve her, right? We now must question, why did they want her, right? We already knew she was trying to be kidnapped before, but now we know some of the players involved, and what is the goal? They appear to want to do the same thing with Soji, but obviously they're not doing the whole like grabbing it thing. And by having it on a Romulan installation, the Borg cube is a Romulan installation with a whole bunch of Romulan guards. It's clearly under the control of the Romulans. If this was a high level Romulan free state, which by the way, I think I like that. I think that's what they called it, right? That's kind of a new cool, instead of the Romulan Star Empire, it's like the Romulan free state. They're very direct and descriptive with their, the Star Empire. That implies that this is not a high level like government like thing. Otherwise, they would have just had one of their guards go and grab Soji. I mean, and say, here, just put her in a fucking box and send her to
us.
Well,
they're trying to get to a nest of synths, basically,
yes.
Right?
That's a good point. That's another piece of information we got. They keep referring to the other abominations. Mm-hmm. You know, the nest. So clearly, that could be, maybe that's the key motivator is to get them not for research, but to get them to find out where some other ones are hiding. Implication there being more similar, I presume, to Soji in that.
And that's either they want to destroy them, or they want to use them, leverage them for some kind of super war, or like the leaders try to trick the people into being scared of them, and then they think they're getting them to destroy them, but then the leaders really want to, you know, leverage them for super battle or something, some kind of double cross thing. I don't know, but they want those things for some reason. I don't know what is that thing in Narek's ear.
I presume it's supposed to be either jewelry or a communications device. I was curious about that myself.
Yeah. So,
and then there was that cool Romulan head guard guy who had the crazy haircut.
Oh yeah, that guy was tight.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that guy was kind of cool. Yeah. And then the Romulan guards, they had the women guards had, it was more like TNG style hair but longer. And I know, and that Romulan main guard, of course, had that crazy kind of modified Marine sergeant top with a slight curve to it. And I thought there was an interesting evolution of the Romulan culture, because you presume they have this strict society, very authoritarian, fascist, effectively, society. Mm-hmm. And that's completely blown to pieces, and they're scattered, and there's now a diaspora of Romulan refugees, essentially, in the Romulan Free State, trying to cobble together whatever resources they have on the worlds they ended up on. And it seems that the culture of hair and clothing and other stuff has relaxed as a result, because they're
gonna have cool hair now.
And I'd be interested to learn more about what's the current structure of the Romulan government, because are they still trying to be as overtly restrictive as they were before? If they are, it's not really possible in their current situation. You'd think they wouldn't have really the control over the population they had before, would presume.
Oh yeah, and so that's what I was trying to get back to, circle around to, is when you were saying that we don't know if these Romulans that are after the synthetics, we don't know if this is a Romulan sort of governmental force or some kind of side force or something. Right.
Yeah, because if it was a governmental thing, you would think this girl is on the station and they could just grab her if the whole goal was to grab her. Now, it seems clear to me that Narek, he's suggesting that his whole plan is, you guys are being too aggressive. That's not going to get us what we need. We can't just grab one of these things and torture them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get close to her and gain her trust and then manipulate her into revealing the information to me. That appears to be what his plan is.
Like, she doesn't even know what that guy does. And then all of a sudden, like, they both go to work and then they're like, it's like, oh, he's the guy that does this. And they're working together.
He's all chilling
in the
back.
He's like one of the doctors.
as the main doctor's just like slurping off some eyeball juice.
Oh yeah, and then like they're wearing like those funny face masks that are all like mesh and sexy.
Yeah,
and
I kept thinking. I kept thinking about like that's what they wear so you can see the woman's breasts.
Right, but they're wearing it over their mouth.
Yeah, I know, it was weirding me out.
New fetish, right, right there.
Yeah, totally. And she did that thing when she put it down. That sort of theatrical. Wipe my hands of it. She had a Borg metal thing and she put it in a bag and then she did that hand wipe thing where she clapped her hands together and wiped them. Like, so what is
drama.
What is she really getting rid of?
And she was always like, didn't want to, she was always glad to be rid of it. You could tell when she put it down, she was like, eh.
Yeah, right.
She's like, this is gross.
Yeah, why is she putting up all these kind of fronts for all these people in this room?
Romulans be fronting.
Romulans be fronting all the time.
All right, so now
they've got dark secrets.
The episode, you know, the episode ends with Narek talking to his sister and all that, but you know, there's a few more parts with Picard. Interestingly, you know, the Picard parts were very important. I thought the scene with his doctor was really, really intriguing.
Doctor,
has that guy been on
Star Trek?
On Star Trek.
No, that actor has not been on Star Trek before.
That actor has been on
everything else.
Tons of stuff.
Literally everything else he has been in.
Like literally everything else.
But I really like the world building in that supporting scene of him, of his doctor being an old friend from the Stargazer.
Yeah, right.
Because he commanded the Stargazer presumably longer than he just commanded either Enterprise.
And then the dude tried to bring up some like old story about some adventure they had. And
cut him off.
He was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, right. That's kind of funny.
It also appears,
we don't need to add
it
to
also
the story.
Appears that they're referencing, you know, in All Good Things, the elderly Picard, which is around this time period, had Iromatic syndrome.
So I was wondering, that abnormality in the parietal lobe, is that, do you think that's a reference to All Good Things? Is that
So if you go online, where the people are much cleverer than we, they
are the people.
And the crowdsourcing and all that good stuff. There's been a lot of discussion about this, and I think when you pull it all together, there's a few different angles that are all equally interesting and not mutually exclusive. One is All Good Things. In the future, he had Iromatic syndrome, and it did reference a defect in the parietal lobe, right? So now they're re-referencing that. That's clearly on purpose. The doctor has now discovered this with the scan that's like super advanced at that time, right? When Picard is Locutus, and they're dealing with him in the second episode, The Best of Both Worlds, Part 2.
Lemucus.
They refer to... Dr. Crusher refers to activity in his parietal lobe, and they say that's Picard right there, right? There is a suggestion out there that perhaps the Borg implants left a damage.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Either damage or maybe it was something that they didn't think to remove.
It's some sort of side effect, yeah.
And something people have noted is that, you know, in First Contact, he's all like hearing the Borg Queen and shit. I was like, why is he doing that? It could be maybe there's something about the defect or the damage or the sabotage to the parietal lobe of his brain is what ultimately causes the Iromatic syndrome. And if that's the case, if that turns out to be the case, that the Iromatic syndrome or the defect is caused by the Borg stuff, maybe they figure that out over the course of these seasons and Picard gets cured of it and goes on to enjoy his retirement.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking was going to happen because...
I hope so,
dude. Because his doctor is you know, telling him, he's like, do you still want to go out even though you have this? He's like, I really want to go out now. And that's going to probably
more
be referenced... Yeah,
more than ever.
What's Dr. Crusher up to?
That's like, what I would... Well, yeah, I was wondering that with...
Maybe she can come over.
She might be dead.
I was wondering that with... because Laris, right? Laris?
Mm-hmm.
I was getting kind of I think it was her, right? That I was getting like kind of a Beverly sort of vibe with.
You think something terrible is going to happen to those two?
So she said,
"I hope not."
You think that? Because I have a feeling that like the Romulans are going to show up and just like.
She seems pretty clever though.
She might
dodge and juke.
There's one part where she's all yelling at Picard and Jovan or whatever, but mostly Picard, and she goes, if it's important to Jean-Luc Picard, it must be important to the whole galaxy.
Yeah.
That's totally something Beverly Crusher says. She's there was some
I was like,
great Jean-Luc Picard.
I was like, yeah, that's that's totally true.
Well, okay. So it could be that Crusher in this time period is dead. I hope not, but that's possible.
I'm saying her character is being replaced by.
No, I understand that the function. Right.
Yeah, but
the function
how?
Of
okay,
character.
How are you going to die though? Like in the.
I don't think
24th
she's dead.
Century,
well, I think if somebody because somebody was like, why would he? Why wouldn't he call Crusher? Why would he call his old friend from the Stargazer? And Crusher might be if she's off captaining her own ship and having adventures or something.
Right.
And this guy is, you know, on Earth. And the other thing is that Crusher wouldn't necessarily sign off on his shit. You know, Crusher.
Right. She's going to keep him in check.
This
she's going to be like, no, you shouldn't do that.
This guy seemed like he was easily like bullied by Captain Picard. You know?
Yeah, right.
Well, so speaking of, you know, Crusher and other, there was that part where the Jovan is like, you should call up Geordi and Riker and all that stuff. Yeah. Now, either
Don't call Geordi.
Maybe he's better. Maybe he's like, you
should
know,
be calling
up
fucking Worf. What's he up to?
Yeah, Worf would rule.
So I was gathering there, either that's A, just like kind of a mean little tease, like or it could just be like they're shutting that down because Picard's like, no, I would never ask them to do that because they'd say yes, and so they're basically saying we're not gonna fucking get these guys.
I think there's two things, and I think they make it relatively clear in the scene, although it's pretty, it is subtle, is that A, yeah, maybe it's just a pure plot production thing because it's like, this is not a reboot of TNG. This is focused on Picard, so we don't want to distract people with all these other characters. All right, practical story reason. But the in-universe reason, I think, is hugely valid because A, he is upset about Data dying because of, effectively, it's Picard's fault. It's not Picard's fault, of course, but in the grand scheme of things...
Who is upset about Data dying?
Picard.
Oh,
because
yeah,
Picard himself, his fucking clone and shit. I mean, like, this is all... Like, all this was some personal... This was all... The Data is dead because he knew Picard, basically. And that's... Picard is carrying that guilt. But I think even more so...
Some captain guilt, right?
If you think about Picard... If you think about All Good Things, that is a story where future Picard goes around asking his friends for help, and they all think he's crazy and has mental problems, but they help him anyway.
Yeah.
They risk their careers and their lives to help him with this crazy, like, Q is and paradoxes and what, you know... And he knows that, and he doesn't want to, he says, I don't want to go through that again. He doesn't want to risk anyone else's life. He doesn't want to, like, try to redeem himself for Data dying by having some other motherfucker die.
Yeah.
Because then he's going to have a whole nother, like, 10 more seasons of this goddamn show.
So on the one aspect, though, when they talk about, you know, she's, Laris is berating him kind of, well, yeah, she's berating him, but she's saying, I think she went, it's after he went and got chewed out at, was that Starfleet headquarters?
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, it was the Starfleet Commander in Chief,
and so
Admiral Clancy, Kirsten Clancy.
Yeah, so yeah, so after he came back from that, she
had a really deep voice.
Laris,
she was scary.
She was scary. Dude.
That was scary.
Laris was basically saying, "Why are you doing that? What are you doing? You're crazy. You ask for shit. You do all this stuff. Whatever." She said, and Picard's like, "What do you want me to do? Stand by." Like, while, you know, this, my last attachment to Data is gonna die, basically. And so, if he wants help doing that, he actually, and he says to Joban, he goes, cause he's like, he says, what am I gonna stare at spittle bugs on my pinos or whatever he says?
He's like,
spittle bugs.
He's like, Joban, are you gonna spit on my penis?
That's right.
So Joban,
I'm supposed to worry about the spittle bugs on my penis.
So Joban even offers his help, but what does Picard tell him? He's like, "No, it's more important that you watch the spittle bugs on my penis or whatever."
Somebody's got to watch them.
And I think he honestly believes that. Right?
But it's like conflicting because on the one hand he's saying that's lame for me to sit and watch spittle bugs on my penis, but that's what you should do instead of helping me because this whole thing's supposed to be about like saving my friend. So if you want to help me save,
that's a good point.
Fucking get on board, man.
I hadn't thought about it. Now here's a question for you all. I'm just putting it out there because the question's floating around out in the world is, do you think there's anything shady about Laris or Joban?
No. I mean, not yet.
They seem like they're part of the sort of like pastoral homeland sort of theme of Picard. Like, this is his sort of safe and quiet place. These are his buddies. They're his caretakers. They're the people that are running his farm.
Yeah, because there doesn't seem to be any reason for it, because it's not like he's been plotting forever.
I think it's racist. I think it's racist online who are like, they're fucking Romulans. Of course they're shady.
No, that's exactly racist.
You know? Don't you think? Yeah. I would be kind of pissed off like if it turns out there's anything shady. Like, I think
not
be
Romulan lives.
I don't think these
lives.
I don't think they're shady at all. I think something absolutely horrible is going to happen to these people.
See, I also hope that doesn't happen. So
I hope it doesn't happen either, but I think that's what's going to happen.
I think that's more likely than them being bad, but I don't know that either of them.
Them being bad would be, I think, bad writing, and I would get angry.
Yeah.
Them getting killed could work.
They might know. They might know some stuff, and they're going to reveal some more stuff that they don't know. That's their role in the story.
I don't think they should get, if they do get killed, I don't think they should get killed yet. I think that...
Yeah, they'll last a little bit.
I think it would be better if it was like season 3 type thing or something, if they like sacrifice.
I think, isn't it just going to be like one season?
No, they already renewed it for 2 seasons.
Really?
And supposedly the plan is 3 seasons. Patrick Stewart's like, I'd like to do 3 seasons, and they have a story plan supposedly
okay,
for 3 seasons.
Okay, he's cool with 3.
I think he's like...
Does he have a...
It's only 10 episodes a season.
Is there a no Wesley clause?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a yes, a definitely
Wesley clause. I would love to see...
Wesley clause.
I would love to see...
I like Will Wheaton.
It's not going to happen, right?
He's going to be Commodore fucking Wesley. Commodore Crusher.
I think Will Wheaton is great, too. I think he's fantastic.
I think they. I would love for them to include him. And I think it would be even better if they included him as... as sort of that classic example where he's not in Starfleet, and he's in fact whatever he's doing it exceptionally well. But it, like he's running a restaurant or something, like where not that he's a failure, the opposite, that he's so that he's realized that his skills are like to be a good person,
right?
You know. Anyway, but so anyway, that that was a question, and I'm hoping they don't go in that direction. I mean, we'll find out in terms of like them being shady, but that's been out there, and again, I think it's just because people are racist.
It was funny when he went to the headquarters, by the way, when that motherfucker at the front desk was
he was all
because like Picard didn't give him his name because he just assumed he knew what he was, but that guy probably thought he didn't because he's going senile or something. And, and then he probably sees on his record that he's retired. He's like, oh, I'm glad to see you up and about.
If
that,
you're like
that look that Picard gave, it kind of reminded me of the subtlety of the look of Gandalf when Bilbo disappeared. Mm-hmm. And actually. The first episode, I'll have to remember what scene it is at some other time, but the beginning of it, there was a shot of Picard that reminded me of Professor X, which it's kind of irrelevant. Yeah, now, I guess.
Well, kind of even the opening theme
and
is a little bit.
When, Ian McKellen.
When you're like a retired military officer and you go to a military base, like the people there that are still in the military, they salute you. Like, like we were watching this and like Natalie was like, doesn't he get a salute? Like he's a fucking retired admiral.
Yeah, but he didn't even know who he was though.
Who doesn't know who fucking Captain Picard is?
I don't know, some fucking shit.
that guy was like, whatever, what's the
I think it was his first fucking day. He's like the fucking like private bullshit.
private bullshit
reporting for duty. We ain't found shit.
He didn't find shit at that
Tuvok
desk.
Tuvok said that.
Yeah, that's right.
But then when he gets fucking, they said fuck in this episode twice.
Yeah, one is
they said, that admiral said fuck.
Yeah, and then Lara said fucking cheeky bastards.
Yeah, but she said fecking.
Fecking.
The Irish version. That's like different. When Picard says merd.
I think it's still closed captions the same, though, unfortunately.
How come they got Irish Romulans?
I like that.
It's good.
No, it's good. I like
it. Yeah, it's good. But, so.
And then Jaban is like, where's he from? Like, Ohio?
Yeah, right.
He's all down.
He's an Ohio Romulan.
He's all folksy. He's like, sounds like a Mr. Rogers.
And then there's a British Romulan.
When
the sexy Romulan.
When Picard just kind of strolls in there and says, like, I'd like you to reinstate my service. And then he starts going off into like, and I'm going to need this. I'm going to need this. You knew he was going
to have to be an admiral.
Yeah, right. You can just demote me. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I'm cool with that. Yeah. And then you can totally see it.
Give me a ship.
She knocked him down. And
the fucking hubris.
Yeah. But she was like, so she, when he goes, it's not our decision to whether people, species live or die or not. She's just straight up like, yes, it is. Yeah, I was like,
I know. Right?
On one hand, she had a point at first about him strolling in there and wanting all this shit. But then she goes and says something like that.
Well, so
but I guess that makes no bones about the fact is that is what she's saying without saying it.
That's, she is. What I thought was great, this was a very Deep Space Nine scene. I thought this was very Deep Space Nine level quality writing in that scene, in the sense that we go in there, we identify with Picard, we know his full backstory, we know the backstory for the current plot. We have faith that he's right, we believe in his morals, we want to support his morals, 100% on board with Picard. The exchange does not necessarily change that, but her position is simply the practical utilitarian position that any government today would take and that the Federation has frequently taken. And it is absolutely more difficult to defend that morally from the Picard Star Trek style moral philosophy, but not from the Federation philosophy, as the Federation being a stand-in for, you know, the United States or the Western hegemony.
Absolutely, she has a point. I think when she sort of just says, yes, it's our decision when species live or die. Yeah. I guess she has a point in that, yes, she's in a tough position. And you can say, well, she didn't need to go that far. But at the same
time, there's like millions of species.
That is what you're doing. That's kind of pointing out the downside of defending this position that is tough. It's a tough position to be in, right?
But
you do have to decide whether species live or die. And right, that's very anti-Star.
It's John Bolton. It's George Bush.
Right.
It's a viewpoint that is considered a valid. Doesn't mean it's correct, but it's a coherent viewpoint. As in, as she stated, information we didn't know before. 14 members of the Federation were like, "We're fucking out of here if you help these motherfuckers out." You know, so. that's a geopolitical or geogalactic or no galactical political. I don't know.
We'll have Even though you would think that 14 wouldn't really make that much of a difference.
I guess it depends on which 14.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's the other fucked up thing. That's the other thing. Absolutely, that is fucked up. But it is also reflective of exactly how things work today. And I think that's what it's supposed to call attention to.
I think that Gene Roddenberry didn't like the idea. I mean, I'm not going to speak. I don't fucking know. But
in this case, you may speak for him.
I'll speak for him. I think he was against, though, the idea of this sort of like... movement away from this idyllic sort of society and putting these realities, all the things we think of as realities today, he was trying to say that no, they don't have to be realities. They can be totally changed. And when we move away from this idyllic society, we're moving back and towards what today's realities are. Not to say that it's right or wrong, but it's interesting that's a movement away from his sort of like expressed the vision that they tell us about he had, you know, without having, you know, fucked them or anything.
It's less utopian. He had a utopian vision.
Yeah, he did.
And this is showing a much less utopian situation.
Roddenberry, like George Lucas, like he's problematic in both his the expression of his philosophy, the conflicts and contradictions in his philosophy, and also how his philosophy evolved. Because Star Trek, the original series, was much more realistic in the sense that there were obnoxious admirals and people and stuff like that, and it was more about the utopia can be had, but it's hard to keep kind of thing. You know, it's something you have to constantly work for. He later, with the Next Generation, decided, no, I'm just going to declare utopia. There's no bad guys. It's only space anomalies and misunderstandings.
Right,
and that was the first two seasons of TNG.
Right, the Federation is like the highest evolution of mankind,
and it didn't really work in the end, right? Because ultimately, that doesn't really make sense. It doesn't necessarily make sense for drama, right? And especially if the point you're trying to make is again that utopia is something to strive for, but don't fool yourself into thinking. And I think that's where Deep Space Nine did the best job of saying it's not that this is not pretty awesome. It's just don't fool yourself into thinking it's awesome for everybody at all times and is always right.
Yeah.
And that some of the things that make it awesome for us are actively making it shitty for others.
Yeah.
Which is a very hard thing to argue with, even though like we all want to think like, yes, you could actually, if everyone was just chill out and make some deals, like everyone could be totally happy in the whole universe, Romulans, everybody
Gorn, be chill to each other.
But in the reality, there's still these conflicts that can, some of them are just cultural, and that's really annoying. You know, the Romulans have their culture, the Klingons, the Vulcans, everyone's getting into these cultural battles.
Those
it seems like
Bajorans and Cardassians.
So that was that whole scene, right? And I guess there was a part where he says you're doing this at your peril, which I didn't take as a threat. I couldn't consider that as a threat to her, but I think it was just saying like it was kind of a weird crazy man.
I'm Admiral fucking Picard, and I know this is a problem, and you're not listening.
It was like a weak man lashing out.
Yeah, but or I was wondering if, and that's what I was leaning towards. But I was also wondering if maybe he's just simply he's just saying everything's going to get fucked up if we don't do this, you know, so I don't know.
And him...
which is awesome.
For, I believe, perhaps only the second time in Star Trek after the Voyager Caretaker episode, we see some other fucking Starfleet people going down a mall escalator.
Oh, yeah. I was right.
And first of all, it's still weird because it straight up was just an escalator.
Right.
Like,
denied.
Up, it was not
an escalator.
It was not a future escalator. It was an escalator,
right?
And it kind of, and as the denouement to that particular scene, it was so depressing because he's all standing on it, sliding down, like going
all
down.
Pissed.
It was
that landmark?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, but that would work for the scene, right? Because that whole thing was a realization that you can't always go back and pick up where you started off from.
Can't go back home.
You can't go back home, right. And maybe sometimes something can happen, but really you can't just come in and expect to demand a ship, your Captain Picard, Admiral Picard, whatever, all this shit again. And that was his realization when she said, and this was kind of mean, when she said, do it your best at go home. That was a little unprofessional. She didn't have to go that far.
Oh, yeah, she was being a total... But again, he had just badmouthed Starfleet.
The admirals in Starfleet are a bunch of cranky old bitches, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking assholes.
Pieces of shite.
Yeah, so he just... So yeah, so I guess it was just the
so he goes to get his ship from like those people that live in that trailer out in the desert, and that's where
I think he's just the one person.
That's where they did that the scene from TOS.
Uh-huh.
With the Gorn.
And Bill and Ted.
And Bill and Ted.
Where they threw Bill and Ted off of the cliff.
Yeah. The best part is growing up, I had seen the Gorn episode of TOS a million times. Those rocks just screamed out TOS. And they were used in TNG. They were used in other Star Treks, maybe not as overtly, but they were used before. But ever since Bogus Journey, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's pretty iconic. It's amazing how recognizable it is.
And in Bogus Journey, they go there because they were watching that episode of Star Trek on TV.
Yeah. Right.
So the robot Bill and Ted, which, oh my God, Bill and Ted AI robots.
Bogus Journey is
the whole plot of Bogus Journey is
underappreciated.
Those AI robots.
Oh my God, this is basically
a Bogus Journey. So this is
they did travel through time.
So last week we talked about how the plot was basically the same as The Big Lebowski. And this one is basically the same as Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, except they haven't met God yet.
It's coming.
Yeah. I wonder if William Sadler, who was so brilliant as the Section 31 agent Sloan on Deep Space Nine, he played Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
And he was in
He's in
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, he was. And he's in Bill and Ted 3. So he's going to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, he is. Cool. He plays Death.
That's just like
you
the
may
death
be a
from
king
that.
Or it's a
like
street sweeper, but sooner or later you dance with the Reaper.
It's like a humorous version of the Death from the Seventh Seal.
Yeah, I think you're right. Things.
So yeah, you're talking about Raffi.
It's an Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah, you're talking about what?
Ingmar Bergman
with who's that actor? Max von Sydow.
Yeah, Max von Sydow. That's right.
And he's this knight, and he's being. Pursued by Death, and they keep playing chess.
It's a laugh a minute.
It's a laugh a minute movie. It's about the plague, and it's a hilarious movie.
So,
what do you think about this Raffi character? What do you think of this introduction? I thought it was fucking charming.
Yeah, I thought it was too. You know, she all jumps the water out. She wants that wine.
It was getting close to cheesy.
No, I liked it. I thought it was good.
I think it
that
ended
looked
up-
like a. Pretty chill place to live, by the way. I would totally like to live in, you know, you got your pad out there.
And I think that's, again, on purpose, because Picard's about to drag her ass out into fucking space, and you have to, again, show that her willing to do that means she's going to leave that awesome, chill place where she drinks wine and smokes
Okay. Like, he brought that wine from his vineyard, but he brought one bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Okay, who brings... Okay, what the fuck is one bottle of wine? If you're going to drink some wine, like, you got to bring, like... There's fucking two of them. At least two of them.
I think it's the right strategy. I think it's the right strategy for this reason.
You need at least two bottles.
You bring the one bottle of wine because you're trying to convince her. She probably already has a few bottles of wine. This person hates him. This person hates him, clearly. It seems that she must have been involved in something that happened related to either the Romulan, I'm guessing something related to the Romulan escape plan shit, that she was one of his... Maybe she was his first officer or something.
I think
while he was still in Starfleet before he left, her loyalty to him caused her life to get fucked up because of a decision.
But he still has a direct link to her with a comm badge.
It's like, you know, it's like a phone.
Raffi.
So
I think you can just use that thing for whatever.
So with the wine.
But like, it wasn't like a secret connection because why did he? I don't know.
I don't think it was secret. Listen, with the wine, you bring one because this person hates you, but you know they like this wine. And if you bring more. She can just kill you or say no. Mm. But if you only bring one, you'll be like, more. You want more of this shit.
Okay, yeah.
You want more.
And because of technology, you can just transport back to France and get a case of it.
That's right.
Be like, okay, well, here's the 86.
Yeah. And you can't look as jaunty tossing some, just a bunch of bottles if he's carrying a case.
He's got like a funny like thing that's all like a wine bottle carrier. It's like some kind of woven sort of...
You don't think that comm badge was like... Because I know the deal with the comm badge. Everyone knows the deal. It's just a magical talk to everyone button. But that's more used as an easy way to communicate with people. This seemed like a direct route to her. It was like kind of unusual.
Yeah, right. Like that's why he was saving it.
Yeah, like it seemed like he was saving it to talk to her for that one moment.
There's the whole scene where he finds his little box and he puts it on. And he's like, pah!
Yeah, and I guess it could just be an old Starcock comm badge that he happened to have, but it seemed they seemed to.
It lines up with his retirement presumably, because I mean that was the DS9 style, you know, later TNG movie style com badge. It wasn't the TNG.
Yeah, it just felt, and I could be totally wrong. It just felt like that was supposed to be used as his one out to her for she owed him one or something like that.
Or it was
I don't know.
Some sort of dramatic license business.
Yeah, I guess.
But anyway, so there's that scene, and then of course we see Narek talking to his sexy sister.
Sexy Narek talking to his sexy sister.
She's got round ears.
Is that a Beatles song? Sexy sister.
Sexy Sadie.
Sexy sister Romulan fucker.
Yeah, sexy sister Romulan fucker.
And
that's a white album.
She vouched for her brother. Yeah, that's a crazy album. That's reasonable album. It's pretty good.
That's a different podcast.
Yes. When Rizzo vouched for her brother, that's got to be like some kind of shit where she's going to have to put her money where her Romulan money where her Romulan mouth is.
Where is Romulan mouth?
Where is a Romulan mouth? Do they just have the one mouth?
Is it right there? Do they have another mouth somewhere?
Do we have like extra mouths?
It's like in their knee, like those genitals.
It could be in a knee. It could be somewhere else.
Of that other thing. So she was like, I vouch for him with my life. So at some point, it's got to mean she maybe dies. I don't know. She's probably going to die. Nice of you to knock. Why start now? What is that implying?
It implies that she walked in on him while he was jerking off when he was a teenager at some point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
She used to constantly walk in. You know all those videos?
She's one of those.
I heard about, there's this website that I heard about called Pornhub. I read about it in an article, right? And in that article, it said Pornhub.
That's not my go-to.
There's lots of brother-sister incest porn. But apparently, the evolution of this porn, since people were kind of like, you know, this whole brother-sister thing, we know it's fake, first of all. And so they evolved it to stepbrother-stepsister porn. Mm-hmm. Avoid some of the legal constraints that might be problems caused by incest, and makes it a little less oogie, right? Mm. But that's, I think, basically what happened. I think they probably might even have a video.
They probably have a video. Yeah, that's where, what it was. What happens to those people?
She walks in and he's all, you know, he's enjoying his Romulan business and his Romulan porn and a little Romulan ale and a little Romulan weed.
Romulan ale.
And he's chilling. He's doing his nightly business. And then she all just walks in without knocking. He's all like, hey, well, how about you knock? And
Romulan weed probably makes you like super paranoid. You're just like... You're just like, oh my god!
Do you think they drink synth ale, Romulans? They don't like synths, so you think they drink synth ale? I don't know. Who knows?
All right, That's an example of the jokes Dan's gonna tell. If you send in reviews.
No, the premise is false because it said that Romulans will use computers for number crunching. So, unless you got some AI beer that detects how drunk you are and makes you drunker.
AI beer. I'm gonna go cop. I'm gonna get the website for that. That's gonna be the next thing.
Copyright it. Yep. You look like a plucked whack-ack.
Yeah,
I'm guessing that's a chicken.
I was like really confused. I mean, I understood the implication. And I really wanted to look up. There better be some Rule 34 whack-hack stuff going on soon.
See some.
I missed that one. Is that the Romulans talking?
Yeah, because he's making fun of her. Mm. Like that's where it's revealed to us that she's in fact a Romulan,
right.
And his sister.
And he like all walks through her hologram.
Yeah.
Spittlebugs on the Pinos, sipping jippers on the beach.
Great, yeah.
Sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
The Pinos.
Oh. That transporter, man, that Picard walked through, the headquarters, when there was like those, it was really cool.
For the listeners at home, Dan is very excited about this.
I rewinded this part a few times, because like I rewinded that suplex from the first episode. This one, when there were five transporters, people porters.
And five is better than three.
Better than three. Right? Five is, but not in Price is Right rules if you're guessing for four.
That's
or something.
True. It depends.
So they had those five. Whoa. Shit. They had those.
Sorry.
It's okay. No. Don't ever apologize.
That's my first
for
peak.
Being you.
I didn't peek the last episode.
I didn't pee. So they had those five transporters, and people were just walking in and out of the transporters. You know, they didn't have to get on a transporter pad and go zoop-de-zoop. They had to do what we're all imagining, where you walk through a door. Now, the question is...
They didn't have to get some cranky Irishman to, like, transport them.
Right. From number three is favorite transporter room.
This is my favorite transporter.
So, but there's got to be a weight on those things, right? only can handle five people in at a time. Do you think he gets stuck in like a what's it called? What's it called when you're in the buffer field or whatever?
Okay, because
and so you get
pattern
like
buffer.
Pattern buffer. There's got to be a queue for the pattern buffer, so you're probably just sitting
if there's a location,
ethereal plane of existence.
If there's a location and everybody from Earth wants to go to this location, then
yeah, like to a Nationals game,
some kind of waiting. Yes. Waiting
like a queue.
Room.
Yeah, there's a waiting room. What do you think?
Because you figure at that point in history, like there's going to be a
Paul
ton
McCartney
of people
concert.
On Earth.
Like a what?
Like a Paul McCartney concert.
Yeah.
Or Gwar.
What is that? Wait, did you just pick those names because?
I'm just citing examples of places where everyone would go to at once.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Or like Paul McCartney, or not Gwar anymore. But at one time.
You've been to a Paul McCartney concert.
I went to 3 Gwar shows. The first one was super well attended. Over the years, they got less popular.
I've been to a Gwar yard sale.
Gwar yard sale in Richmond. Gwar's awesome, man. And Mike bought some kind of reissue Wolverine comic.
He bought a bunch of old penthouses.
I thought he bought some. Okay. So. Anyways, I was just wondering how long the pattern buffer, how long sometimes people have to wait to get through that pattern buffer.
I was thinking about how, you know, nobody's entering coordinates, so I'm assuming it's like on your little device or whatever.
Yeah.
You just pre-program, you're like, oh, this is where I want to go.
Like Google Maps or something.
Yeah, and then it's just like, okay, I know where to send you, and I'll just, I agree, I'm sure there's a buffer.
Some kind of buffer.
You're probably not
man.
Conscious doing it. I like the music. Right. I like the music notice. In that scene. Like the TNG music kicking in when he was all like,
yeah. Was that the first? That was the first time they played TNG.
That was the first like full on.
Full on.
And again, I think the production team is doing a great job with like Picard losing his cane in the first episode where he like slowly starts to not need it.
Oh yeah.
Needs it less and less until he just doesn't have it. And I think they've been doing the same thing with the music because like you hear like little like doo doos like here and there. But I think this was the first time it was like straight up like bam. TNG, right in your face.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. The when you were pointing out how it was sad that he was going down the escalator at the end, because it's like, why he's in a fucking escalator. It's sort of like compared with the fact that he entered through an awesome transporter, and then like for whatever reason, there's a fucking escalator.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
It's like his like he's all like.
All right. So any last final thoughts as we wrap things up? Any key things that hop out at you?
They're really into saying whom. They're really into pointing that out. Instead
well,
of,
if you're using it properly.
Well, right. I know. It's just
that's how you speak English.
Man. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's more of a comment on other shows because I never noticed the whom as much as
Star Trek has often been really good with vocabulary. And so
that's how you got a perfect on the verbal.
So when I okay, yes. So what I on the verbal SATs,
then,
I got a perfect
score. Some teacher thought you were like, bullshit nerd.
Well, so I got a really good score. I got a perfect score on the verbal SATs, right? And then they wrote about it in the high school newspaper, blah, blah, blah. And the when next time we went to the library.
Oh, the librarian.
The librarian was all like, congratulations, Patrick. That's great. You did a great job. How did you get so good at words? And I thought about it. I responded. I said, well, you know, I watch a lot of Star Trek and I read a lot of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Mm. And she looked at me like I was the biggest piece of shit in the world.
The librarians at Stewart were like,
not good.
From another planet or something.
But I felt I was like really sort of I did not know how to react because I was giving an honest answer, which is I watch a lot of Star Trek and I read a lot of the Calvin and Hobbes, and I remember reading Calvin and Hobbes as a kid. When I didn't recognize a word, I'd ask my dad and he would tell me what it was or show me the dictionary or something. But anyway,
so
Star Trek's been good about that for like a long time.
So
okay,
they haven't. No, that is, and that's
real quick, Dan.
You're totally right.
I don't want to step on any toes.
No, you're answering what I said.
But.
Oh, you're saying something now.
Knock, knock.
Oh.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Two.
To who?
To whom, surely.
Ah! How'd you do that so fast?
Relevant.
How'd you do that so fast?
That's a joke I heard from Stephen Fry.
Oh, that's pretty amazing. That was a good timing.
That's totally
and another
Stephen
guy
Fry.
Who has a good facility with the English language.
Back at the ranch. Back at the ranch, I guess Picard is
Stephen Fry keeps
French,
trying to kill himself.
Jean-Luc Picard is.
I know, it's really upsetting.
He keeps messing up.
He keeps tearfully being like, well, thankfully I didn't, you know, get it right this time.
So when they're talking about the Jat Vash, Joban is all like, it's just a children's story. It's a story to scare the boogeyman. It's to scare the kids and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Later on in the investigation scene where they're engaging in digital forensics.
Yeah.
She goes, I thought you didn't believe in the Jat Vash to Picard. He never said he didn't believe in it. Look at that.
Right, and because she's like, first of all, it's not my Jadva.
Yeah. It's like, I thought you didn't believe him. He was inquiring about them. It was Joban who was being like,
because I think those scenes were awkwardly edited together.
Yeah.
They were separate longer scenes, and they squished them together in that awkward way. And
there might have been an extra, and there, who knows, there was also might have been an extra scene where Picard's like, poppycock, flim flam.
Yeah.
I'm none of that. I'm none of that.
He went up the old apples and pears, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, just like it. When he was told he couldn't get a certificate for interstellar service, and he was told by Dr. Moritz Benayoun, he said to drink something stronger. What do you think it was he was drinking that was stronger?
It looked like wine.
Looked like a beer to me.
I thought it might be a Scottish whiskey. Why the fuck do we all see something different?
I don't know.
Did we all just see what we wanted to drink?
I thought, right.
I was like, oh, I could really go for something. This is what I think of stronger.
I thought it was surprising that it would be a beer, but it looked like he was holding a beer. And I was like, that doesn't seem like something he'd drink. But who knows? Maybe he would.
Sipping on some heroin.
Some heroin sipping.
This is liquid heroin.
They probably have that in the future. And then when the doctor, and he was like, what's my prognosis? And the doctor was all like, prognosis negative.
So alone.
That's horrible. That's such a depressing end. And then the next scene is like, oh, on to the next. Go to that star over there.
After the animated series.
Have they left that poor like alien thing to
beyond
die?
The farthest star, far beyond the stars.
Okay.
Beyond the farthest star, the animated series, far, far beyond the stars.
Ooh.
Deep Space Nine. Think about it.
Far beyond the honest stars. Wasn't there something in some show where they were like, follow the mountain to the left?
No, that's in Star Trek VI, I think. He says second star to the right and straight on till morning.
Yeah, no, I remember
that's Peter Pan.
Yeah, but that's from Peter Pan, but Kirk says it.
Oh, okay.
At the end of Star Trek VI, I believe.
I feel like there was one thing from some show.
You see their signatures in space because they're all on acid.
The TOS stuff is, there's a lot of like reference to sort of like the Western canon of literature.
I just thought somewhere somebody said something
to Western Canadian literature.
I thought somewhere someone said something about a mountain, follow the mountain to the left, but I could be something.
No,
something
it's could be. It could
I,
be.
I might be just making
Slipping
shit up.
My brain. Oh, one thing I wanted to just mention briefly from last week was, you know, we were talking about.
Last week.
Dan and I were having that debate about, you know, Picard talking about those memories, they're yours.
Yeah, he's being a condescending asshole.
Dan's of the opinion he was being condescending. I was of the opinion he was being very heartfelt and touching. And I had a realization in the intervening time that Picard himself, because of his experience in the inner light, has fake memories.
Hey, there you
but
go.
They have meaning to him because he has children and stuff. And
you pulled me over.
I think that's what they were getting at.
You pulled me over
last week, but I think that's what they're getting.
I will submit to that logic. It makes total sense.
Anyway, we got to wrap things up here. But Dan's pointing.
I'm pointing more, just real quick, because I got to, so I don't think about it at night when I'm sleeping. when they go. Non-local information packets are routed through subspace relays. This routing leaves tiny but unmistakable code marks. Technobabble. They have technobabble.
Yeah.
They have technobabble.
Oh, man. There's pretty decent technobabble.
There's a lot of
Because at the end, she was just like, this motherfucker's off-world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was all like, what?
That was the coolest. That was the coolest part of this episode.
And
the whole part.
And then another technobabble was when Narek was talking about Borg cubes. He was like, when a cube undergoes sub-matrix collapse.
Zip, zap, zip, zap.
That's kind of like sub-matrix collapse. That's some kind of technobabble.
Unimatrix zero.
But you know what? The Borg, they seem to overlook some obvious shit.
That matrix una momento.
They overlook some obvious shit like, oh, this shit's fucked up. Let's just disconnect it from our network. Get rid of it. Who cares about all that technology and shit people are going to discover? And then, oh yeah, remember in TNG when you could just kind of waltz around a Borg cube if they weren't specifically looking for you?
If they weren't like scared of you, basically.
So either they're like, either they're just dumb, or they're just such badasses that they're like, you can have that shit.
Might be both. I think it's like kind of like ants or something.
Yeah,
you know? It's sort of like the Borg have always been sort of that that insect style. Where I think you're right though, but I think it is really a combination of both. It's like on the one hand, it's like we are so unified and so strong in our unity that we don't have to give a fuck about these weird little monkey people.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that's both hubris, but it's also fucking hubris. But that's also it doesn't allow for much independent agency in their individual units, so you could understand why it might be complicated to be like determining what's a threat or not. Like, why would you waste energy? You know, it's not efficient, because it's not efficient for the hive to waste energy attacking something unless it attacks us. Then we can fucking attack it.
Fair enough.
Borg.
Borg.
I'm expecting next week we'll see more Borg, probably 7 of 9.
Oh, and they were talking
what's the other Borg's name?
Hugh.
Yes.
And they were also talking about Dodge being built 3 years ago, and I was wondering if that's just them trying to make you care less about the fact that she died.
I'm not convinced she's dead.
No, because there was that whole pointing out about blaster. Does that look like phaser fire in the reflection of that hand railing? And Rizzo was like, no, it doesn't. And that was like a throwaway. They just moved on after that.
I thought the point of that was that Commodore O was saying, like, you were supposed to get rid of all the evidence, and look, there's evidence that there's disruptor.
She was saying, does that look like disruptor fire? And she's just like, nah.
Yeah, she wasn't as it presented initially, before the reveal that comes like 10 seconds later that they're shady, you're like, oh, she's saying
Commander
like,
did you, O. Did you Commodore O.
Did you Sandra O.
Sandra O.
Killing Eve.
Commodore 64 O.
Side note, Killing Eve, watch it. Brilliant.
Will do.
Genius.
I took it as that it was trying to say, no, it doesn't look like phaser fire because she got warped away or something. I don't know.
I think it was just that she was criticizing her thing. But anyway, probably what's going to happen is Dodge, like at the end of the season, she's going to come in the Millennium Falcon, like Han Solo at the end of Star Wars.
Yeah, right.
You know, and be like, and she's going to shoot Darth Vader.
That's what happened in Karate Kid.
And Darth Vader's going to go like careening
at him, like all awkwardly in the space.
So yeah, that's
what a great world.
I think that's.
Does that cover all your notes?
I mean, I had some random shit about it. They point out the teacups when she's pouring it.
I bet this guy's got more notes that he's not letting.
They put a shot on the teacup as she's pouring it when the doctor professor wanted Earl Grey, and he's like, "I like you." And then I think they just presented that shot of the teacups just so you could see him break later on.
Which doctor?
Oh,
professor?
Yeah, for sure. Allison Pill.
Allison Pill.
No, that's the next name I gotta remember.
I'm sure we'll learn her name soon.
Picard blowing back from the explosion at the beginning when they rewatched the security footage of him getting blowed up. Remember that?
Yeah, it was kind of like when Riker rewatches the recap
that was so awkward.
He's just like watching the show,
and they're just like superimposing that image onto a weird, awkward angle. But that totally looked like you could see the stunt. You know when they show you how they do those stunts where they have them on a harness and a cable, and they just tug them back. Yeah. Anyways, I think by this point. Oh yeah, last one. That car in Boston. Boston is like the fucking Jetsons in this movie.
Yeah.
In this show, rather.
Yeah.
The flying car went by. It was like, you know. And then there's all these flying cars and.
Because if you go to Boston like nowadays, it's like the most medieval city in America.
It really is.
It's like a pre Enlightenment city.
You go to that graveyard in the middle of the downtown where it's like the graves
from
the 1600s, and they're all Halloween movies, scary looking graves.
Yeah, it's freaky deep.
I mean, they're comical almost. It's scary but almost comical how like silly those graves look. Anyway, future Boston, they get some some stuff. All right. Well, I think we'll close up shop there for the evening. Maps and Legends, episode 2 of Star Trek Picard.
I liked it.
I'm digging the show so far.
Yes.
And they seem to be, I'm really digging that, like, they keep sort of answering things and opening up all sorts of new questions. And you're like, whoa, Sims, what the hell is this fucking bot job?
Yeah, when are we going to see
Picard is hitting hard.
It's hitting hard. You know,
when are we going to see Maddox? I don't know.
I'm really curious about that. But anyway, next week is going to be real interesting because it seems that's when they're going to start getting into, you know, pulling the crew together and all that. So there could be pluses and minuses because when you introduce like kooky crew members, that doesn't always necessarily go well in the introduction part. So
supposedly
we'll
like Eva Longoria is.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch at the end. They show the sneak peek. I didn't watch the sneak peek, so.
And it was a much shorter one. At the end of the first episode, they had like this season, but in this one, it seemed to be a little bit more tightly focused, and it was more random imagery, which is smart. You don't want to give away too much of the plot. So, anyway, all right. So that's that.
So buttons.
If you need to contact us, it's @ It's Got Star Trek on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Victor Mendoza.
Leave comments.
You're out there, Victor Mendoza.
Victor Mendoza should leave comments.
Apparently,
and
he lives in Japan now.
iTunes.
Leave reviews on iTunes and whatever else people use.
What do they
there?
Say on the YouTube? You're supposed to like and subscribe everything about your
like
life.
Like and subscribe.
If you don't, you're a bad person.
Start videos by
you're
saying,
a bad boy if you and a girl. A bad boy or a bad girl and a bad boy and a bad everything.
What?
What are you
talking
about?
Like and subscribe.
Hitting people?
Dude.
Hey guys.
People that listen to us are not bad.
If they don't like and subscribe.
They might be if they're listening to us ironically or out of some sort of rage. It's possible there's some rage listeners.
I'd take some rage listeners.
There's no such thing as bad listeners.
Rage listeners pay the same to the advertisers. So it's okay. But, you know, you got the rage listeners who they're all like driving around in their car and they're like, fuck these guys.
Yeah.
They didn't even mention this thing.
Yeah.
They're just a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
This is all accurate. We don't, you know.
We are, in fact, a bunch of white dudes.
Like the technical version of a bunch. I don't know what it is in the future, but right now a bunch is three or more.
There's three of us.
Or more.
How many was there in the Wild Bunch? What was it?
The Wild Bunch?
What's weird is I was thinking that. I was just about to say that. I was about to say the Wild Bunch.
There was a bunch of those dudes.
No.
Anyway, so you can contact us. It's Got Star Trek. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Emails to... No, that's the email. The website's itsgotstartrek.com. You don't need to go to a fucking website. Just sign up for the RSS feed. Subscribe to the goddamn show.
And you'll just get it.
And leave reviews.
It's got Star Trek.
Because then Dan will tell more jokes.
Tell more jokes.
And he, you know, the preview jokes, just to lay it out there.
Just
like the,
press
the preview
pound.
Jokes. Not like that's not like the top tier shit, right? You know, he's got to save something for
I
the.
I believe
reviews,
you want so. More.
It's a good joke.
He's got finely cut gems of humor.
It's a little taste, like when the cocaine dealer. Or the gentleman who is trying to manipulate a woman who has a cocaine addiction, he gives her a little taste.
Yep.
The cocaine dealer gives you a little taste.
I'm a dealer of jokes.
He's a dealer of jokes. He gives you a taste, and then you can't help it. You come
taste.
Back for more.
The spectacle is worn by reason.
What?
What? Okay, good night. good night. That's ridiculous.
What? Have you gone mad? Is it dementia?
I beg your pardon?
Sorry, but you're not a stupid man, so when I hear you say such a stupid idea, I have to ask for other explanations.
Well, how about this? The daughter of the man whose death I have been mourning for 2 decades comes to me for help and assistance, and then she is assassinated in front of my eyes by a Romulan death squad who will then go and try and find and destroy her twin sister. And you want me to sit here worrying what to do about the spittle bugs on the Pinos?
Yes!